I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Kreisler.
And this is the final edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
And now, the final edition takes you to the White House press room.
Mr. President,
you, Governor Cuomo, and other politicians have long been proponents of stricter Republican control.
That's right. We don't want to take anyone's GOP away, but we do want restrictions on semi-rational politics.
Well, can you tell us how, in your second term, you hope to achieve a full or partial ban on high-capacity Republican ammunition?
Well, for too long, Americans have had easy access to deadly GOP ideas. But the last election showed that a majority doesn't want Republicans in higher office. They just want them in the House of Representatives. So, I would change the number of House Republicans from 233, which, frankly, is insane, to 7.
Oh, Mr. President, the NRA, the National Republican Association, has a slogan, "You'll have to pry my stupidity from my cold, dead brain cells."
Yes, it's a popular bumper sticker.
Well, how do you fight that?
We can all agree that there should be stronger background checks on Republicans. Many who seek to join the party are mentally ill or educationally challenged. We need to spot a Todd Akin or Michelle Bachmann before they cause widespread damage. Yes, Bill.
How are you going to get Republicans in the House to agree to a bill that limits Republicans in the House? Isn't that something of a Catch-22 caliber tactical auto-loading rifle?
Well, Bill, there are things I can do by executive order. For example, I can now legally detain anyone I want, anywhere in the world, for any reason, with no repercussions. I could detain the entire Republican Party until after the 2014 midterms.
But realistically, you're not going to jail one half of the two-party system, are you?
Of course not. I'll probably do something more pragmatic, like send drones into the congressional cafeteria. George?
Mr. President, what about people who are Republicans but also celebrities? Where will you draw the line?
Ah, the Hollywood loophole. Take Clint Eastwood. We would not allow him to get a chair from a store or a chair show.
Can you actually rein in a whole party that operates without regulation or rationality?
It won't be easy. That's why I'm creating a new bureau to regulate Republicans, the Department of Tobacco, Firearms, Explosives, Money, Racism, and Conspiracy.
The word is that you are appointing a Republican to head that agency.
Yes. I believe a Republican can best restrict other Republicans.
Is that a compromise?
No, that's a sellout. You should learn the different ways I disappoint my base.
Mr. President, can't you fight harder against the Republicans you claim to want to limit?
I would, but I have to go walk Eric Cantor's dog.
Now a special report. A powerful lobby secretly runs our government. The final edition's Stone Peck reports.
They've written state laws all over the country. They get millions of dollars from a cabal of anonymous donors. No one has more power than the lobbyists. For homeless children. Ronald Van Tee, political analyst for Globeco Petroleum, has studied them.
The states give homeless kids billion-dollar subsidies. The feds give them massive cuts in capital gains taxes. Well, surprise, surprise, all those bills were authored by the same starving 7-year-old kid.
Indeed. We tracked down little Tommy Broadhurst, who wrote all this legislation. Tommy, what about critics who say you and other homeless children have too much power?
So cold.
I don't care. I'm not letting you inside. Bob Dundry is a former New Hampshire state assemblyman.
I crossed the homeless kids, and now I'll never get elected again. Fortunately, now my kids are going to be homeless.
Well, but most people disagree with the homeless kids on almost every issue.
Too bad. These kids just wait for off-year elections, then take over state assemblies through a motivated base of malnourished, underage voters.
So even though everybody wants lower taxes for the rich and more money for military contractors...
Forget it. Homeless kids rigged the system.
But when I spoke to little Tommy, He seemed to think the kids were the victims.
Why are you yelling at us?
Just tell the truth. Where do you get the money?
We don't have any money. My sister is crying. What's wrong with you?
Don't play that game with me. You live in this giant 20-room place.
It's an abandoned school.
So how do we take our country back? Ronald Van Tee of Globeco says, give a damn.
Multinational corporations, gun enthusiasts, insane religious fanatics. These are the people who've got to start speaking up for themselves. They're getting buried.
I'm Stone Peck for the final edition.
Top 10 marriages of 2013 so far include the nuptials of Hugh Hefner, who's 86 but looks twice his age, and 26-year-old Crystal Harris. Crystal left him at the altar 18 months ago after, as the final edition reported, his penis fell off and she suspected she might be marrying a reanimated cadaver. Why did she change her mind? The final edition radio hour got inside the rigidly controlled Playboy PR machine for exclusive interviews with the lovebirds. Our Stone Peck chatted with the latest Mrs. Hefner.
Crystal, back in 2011 when you left Hef at the altar, you said the reason was things were happening too fast. What did you mean by that?
Well, like, sex with him took less than 30 seconds. That's too fast.
Has he slowed down?
Uh-uh. Now he's done in under 20.
So why did you come back to him?
It empowers me as a woman. Hef reminded me of what he always said on The Girls Next Door. Living in the mansion and having group sex with him and the Shannon twins and getting $1,000 a week allowance empowered us as women.
You see that as the latest crack in the glass ceiling.
What ceiling? We're by the pool.
Okay, but you're saying being paid to have sex with a man old enough to be your great-grandfather and talking about it on national television empowered you and the other girls next door as women.
We weren't paid to have sex with him. Ew, that would be so gross.
Why did you have sex with him then?
Because he was our boyfriend.
So if being Hef's girlfriend empowered you as a woman, being his wife empowers you as a woman even more.
Yes, that's just what Hef said. I'm so in love with Hef. I'm gonna have his baby.
And does Hef love you as much back?
Oh, sure. Every time I say I love you, he goes, mwah, love you back.
Trained as I am to be a skeptic, I had reservations about eternal love between an 86-year-old multimillionaire with a face like a scrotum and a pneumatic babe at least a third his age. So I bearded the aging lion of licentiousness right in his den. Hef, is it true you believe that getting Crystal Harris to marry you and have your baby empowers her as a woman?
I know Dick Gregory.
Or is this just the latest step in your half-century-plus exploitation of pneumatic manipulable women with all the sense God gave broccoli?
Let's see. I'll have a 2-egg white omelet with no salt.
Mr. Hefner, are you senile?
That rhymes with penile.
Or are you just ducking my question?
Well, why shouldn't I? Why should I answer any questions? I'm the mystery multimillionaire who owns Hearst-sized mansions and nightclubs stuffed with half-naked bunnies. When luscious babes see me with my silk pajamas, they fall backwards with their legs open. What wouldn't you give to be a real man like me? To be hung like me? To hump like me?
Frankly, you're more like a smirky, lizardy androgen with all the sex appeal of a bad oyster.
Of course I am. I'm talking about the fantasy Hef that the world imagines me to be.
If anyone was ever dumb enough to fantasize that, it was at least 50 years ago.
Listen, smarty pants, let me explain the historical significance of Hef. I invented the girl next door. In the next house or apartment, stripping naked the way all women do the minute they get home from work, and leaving the blinds open just far enough for you, the dork next door, to get an eyeful and start slamming that ham. And it worked. Soon there were tens of millions of dorks ham-slamming over the girls I found for them.
But you called them playboys.
Of course I did. But the real playboy would be next door slamming the girl, not his ham.
One could say you were the first to mass market masturbation.
It was ridiculously easy. The American male is basically terrified of women. So out comes the ham and away he slams. I called it sexual liberation and a fight for First Amendment freedoms, but actually I was the god of shooting your wad. I created one nation under masturbation. I built a billion-dollar empire on an ocean of semen, relentlessly building my global brand, that trusty African fertility symbol, Wanker Wabbit.
And they called you a publishing genius. But if you'd done the same thing in the street, they'd have called you a pimp.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? I fixed guys up. Guys like me have been around since the beginning of fixing guys up.
I fixed up Troilus with Cressida, Anthony with Cleo. I found Justine for Marquis de Sade. I am Pandarus, the procurer. Pimpus Maximus, the second oldest profession in the world. I may even be undead.
Actually, I've forgotten how old I really am, or who the first babe I ever banged was. It may have been Margaret Sanger.
How does any of this apply to marrying Crystal?
Because when that vast ocean began to run dry, I found a new one. Pimping women to women. The girl next door became the girls next door. Kendra Wilkinson, Holly Madison, the Shannon twins, Bridget the Brainiac Marquardt, the cretin who stood on a beach in Barcelona and admired the Mediterranean Ocean, and that dimmest of bulbs the bourgeoisie has ever spawned, my lovely Crystal. I convinced them all that digging for what was left of Wanker Wabbit's gold, embracing their inner whore, empowered them as women. I am woman, hear me, whore.
This makes you a genius again?
You betcha. Come on to my house. Come on and join the Church of Moron. We practice polygamy. And for 5 seasons, 2 million women aged 18 to 34 embraced their inner whore.
Now the girls next door fantasize about the guys?
No. Guy. Very old guy. As in more or less a ghoul. Down with humping the ghoul next door, girls? Cool. Here's your harem slippers.
So, for you, marrying Crystal is really just the latest spin-off of The Girls Next Door.
If you like. Or the latest human sacrifice to good old Wanker Wabbit. Either way, she'll get canceled if her ratings tank.
I have one final question. How are you empowering Crystal? By having a baby with her who will graduate from high school when her father is 103.
It'll never happen.
I'll drink its blood.
That's how I stay forever frisky.
You are beyond repellent, sir.
Mwah! Love you back.
Hey! Come on to my house, my house, so come on.
This is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
And now we present a New Yorker responding to the stiffest gun regulations in the nation, recently passed by the New York State Assembly.
Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? I've never had a gun, but now you're gonna tell me I can't have a gun? Now I want a gun. Fuck, you know what? Fuck Cuomo. Fuck fucking Cuomo. Oh, Andy, I'm going to do a better job than my dad because he was kind of a douchehead, but he was probably better than Dinkins. Yeah, I'm going to go with that guy now. Fuck him and Bloomberg. Let me tell you about something about Bloomberg. Bloomberg riding around like a billionaire wherever he wants to go. Oh, I'm going to the Mets game. Oh, I'm going to the Yankees game. Oh, someone bring me a small soda. I'll tell you something about Bloomberg. Bloomberg doesn't need a gun because he's got 10 guys around him with guns to shoot whoever he wants. Why do we need gun laws? We don't need laws. We got attitude.
Thank you. segundo. El segundo, come quick. There's a man outside. He wants to fight you.
All right, all right. Probably another damn liberal looking to make his mark.
No, no, boss. This guy is different. He says he knows you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He says he was first, then you came second. He says that's why they call you El Segundo. He says his name is Firsty.
I hear you're looking for me.
You second?
Yeah. Seems so.
Second Amendment?
Yeah.
Well, I'm first. First Amendment. We need to speak.
Well, I'm a man of action, not words.
So they say. They also say you got a not-so-well-regulated militia to do your action for you.
Yep. Everyone packing heat.
Well, I've assembled some folks, too. Video games, movies, reality TV, and we're tired of taking blame for all the trouble you've been causing.
Yeah, what trouble's that?
Death, mayhem, massacre, gunfights at the schoolhouse, gunfights at the playhouse, gunfights at the whorehouse.
Well, that wasn't us started that trouble. I heard it was you, Firsty, inspiring every one of my boys with your violent imagery.
We were just trying to entertain. You gave them the automatic weapons to act out their nonsense, and now we got a lot of dead folks.
Not my concern. It's your fault.
No, sir. It's your fault.
It's on you, so shut up.
I will not shut up. That's my whole thing. I'm pretty sure the people of this town can't survive without talking.
And I'm pretty sure they can't survive without guns.
If I can't yell fire in a crowded theater, why for can you fire off 1,000 armor-piercing bullets in one?
Maybe you should have got yourself a better lobby, Firsty.
That ain't how it's supposed to work, Second. That ain't right.
Actually, it is right. It's my Second Amendment right.
This town ain't big enough for the both of us.
I was wondering when you'd finally say that.
Draw!
And who the hell are you?
I'm Six!
The Sixth Amendment? Ensuring a fair and speedy trial?
No! The Sixth Commandment! Thou shalt not kill!
It's time for another reading from the Final Edition Radio Hour's Big Book of Improving Virtues. Tonight, The Brilliant Bug of Carnegie Hall, in which we learn that the quintessential American virtues of inventiveness, hard work, and stick-to-itiveness are rewarded. Not very long ago, possibly as recently as last fall, there dwelt a bug in Carnegie Hall. He lived with his mother and slightly more than 181,000 siblings underneath the concert area over towards stage right. While his name need not concern us, he was a quite unique bug. Not in any outward way, for to all appearances he was just another of the millions of bugs who make their home in and around the huge bugopolis of the Carnegie. No, his uniqueness was within. He was filled with a burning ambition to be somebody. And since his frame of reference was the happenings around and above him, his ambition focused on becoming a really top-notch classical musician. He applied for an appointment to see his mother, to get her advice on how to proceed. After several weeks, his number came up, and he was ushered in to see her. She couldn't, of course, allot him a big chunk of time, since she had 7,337 more children to see that day. He'd hardly got 20 seconds into his dream of becoming the first Bug Yo-Yo Ma, or Jean-Pierre Rampal, when his mother interrupted him. "I've heard this crap before. You're a bug. Get used to it. Bugs don't play cello or flute, okay? They scuttle blindly in dark corners looking for pathetic scraps of food. You live, you die. Next!" Now, the bug loved his mother and respected her opinion. But he was an American bug, too, and he believed passionately that America, for all its faults, was truly the land of opportunity. No matter what people said, if you wanted something badly enough, and you had the vision and stick-to-itiveness to see it through, you'd get your shot. The bug enjoyed many instruments, but he felt the violin was king of them all. So he set about making himself a violin. Using his agile little forelegs and his fierce little mandibles, he painstakingly put together from tiny pieces of rosewood veneer an extraordinary instrument. It was very, very tiny, of course, and you would have needed a microscope to see it. But if you had seen it, you could have sworn it was a Strad. Next, he had to teach himself how to play. There was no teacher in all of the Bugopolis, so he had to figure it out by himself. He happened to have perfect pitch, and the more he listened to visiting artists like Iona Brown and Itzhak Perlman, the more his proficiency and repertoire grew. But he decided to concentrate on getting one piece absolutely perfect. The piece he chose was Bach's Partita in D minor for unaccompanied violin. After just a few months, he could play a remarkably spirited interpretation. He was ready to perform. Ready to perform in Carnegie Hall. How? Well, he'd figured that out, too. Down by the footlights were ultra-sensitive omnidirectional floor mics that were turned on during recitals. He calculated that if he could get within a few millimeters of one of these and begin playing, the entire audience would be able to hear him. By crawling across the schedule in the lobby, he worked out when the next recital would be, which happened to be a visit by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and he began to practice in earnest. The big night came. The house had filled up. It was that moment when everyone is starting to quiet down in anticipation of the conductor's entrance. The bug knew this was his chance. He gripped his tiny violin and began to scuttle across the stage from under the curtain, stage right. The floor mic seemed so far away and so big, but he was almost there, just a few feet more. The house lights were going down. His timing was perfect. He reached the mic. He couldn't believe it. Could anyone now deny that America was the land of opportunity? He, a mere bug, was playing solo at Carnegie Hall. He tucked his instrument under one mandible, raised his bow, concentrated for a long, long second, just like Oistrakh used to, and began to play. The first tiny haunting notes of the beloved Partita soared through the auditorium, pure and sweet and perfect, the music of some infinitesimal sphere, sublime evidence of an intelligence that, however small, could bring genius to joyous life. Then Riccardo Muti stepped on him. The end.
I take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a melting away.
Guns.
The school massacre in Newtown, Connecticut raised big questions about another issue as well.
Guns.
Mental illness. Significant mental problems. Dr. Harold Koplowitz is a child and adolescent psychiatrist. Good morning.
Good morning.
Guns.
Now you see, I've gone completely out of my mind.
Are we paying enough attention to mental illness in this country?
Guns.
Absolutely not. It's truly amazing to me.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
Guns.
There is a renewed debate underway involving violent video games.
Guns.
We have 15 million children and teenagers in the United States who have a real psychiatric disorder.
Do violent video games lead to violent behavior in children?
They are Obama's favorite weapon. Unmanned aerial vehicles. Or drones.
70% of all psychiatric illness occurs before the age of 24 and 50% before the age of 14.
Drones.
Is war becoming like a video game?
It's nothing like a video game.
The Americans claim that drones are vital in combating terrorism.
This, video games and all of that, the thrill of the kill on the internet.
Many of today's robots are driven with an off-the-shelf video game controller.
I've seen it in the children's eyes. I've watched them play these violent games.
Making it so easy.
Science has come a long way.
Where we went to a game controller. And immediately we saw the training time greatly reduce, the sophistication greatly increase, and we saw those thousands of hours that teenagers and young adults spend gaming directly applicable to unmanned systems operation.
Drones.
As your study brought to light any direct cause and
something
effect,
a lot more this comic book describes a sexual aberration so shocking that I couldn't mention even the scientific term on television.
My troubles start melting
away. This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Antu Chell, Rob Gordon, Kevin Janis, and Tony Hendra. It was written by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. Nathan the New York Gun Nut was conceived and performed by Rob Gordon, and thanks to Scooter of KPFT in Houston for the Changing Subjects mashup. Be sure to check out thefinaledition.com often for daily doses of sizzling satire with teeth. The Final Edition Radio Hour was produced by Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra and edited and engineered by Greg Russ. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC. Copyright 2013.